continue our board meeting with primary financial statements, and I hand over to Aida.
Thank you very much, Andreas. Good afternoon, everyone. We are very happy to be back here before you, and we have a very specific theme for this month, and it's all about MPMs. So we have three papers, hoping to discuss them all today, but if not, we have a backup plan of some more time with you on Friday. And we will take them in the order, so A, B, C. And without further ado, I'll hand over to Nick to introduce the first paper.
Great, thank you. So starting with agenda paper 21A. Agenda paper 21A follows on from the board's September discussion regarding other aspects of the definition of management performance measures, and in particular, management's view of an aspect of performance. In September, the staff recommended guidance clarifying the application of management's view of an aspect of performance, responding to feedback on the exposure draft that indicated in practice there might be diverse interpretations of its application. The board did not make any decision on clarifying the application of management's view of an aspect of performance due to some board members' concerns that the staff proposal would not capture some measures intended by the proposals. During that discussion, some board members also suggested removing management's view of an aspect of performance from the definition as an alternative. So considering the board's feedback in September, Agenda Paper 21A seeks to first confirm management's view of an aspect of performance and as an objective of management performance measures, its inclusion in the definition, before discussing a revised approach to clarifying its application. So the first question in the paper addresses the objective and the definition of management performance measures. The paper explains that management performance measures were introduced with the objective of providing insight into management's view of performance in response to early user feedback, which was also supported in the feedback in the exposure draft. The paper explains the staff's view that including the objective within the definition focuses the scope of the requirements on those measures that meet the objective, and that removing it could expand the scope of the requirements to capture measures beyond those originally intended, representing a significant change to the proposals that does not seem to respond to the supportive feedback in the exposure draft. So the first question for the board on page 10 is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to A, retain providing management's view of an aspect of performance as the objective of management performance measures, and B, if so, to retain management's view of an aspect of performance in the definition of management performance measures?
Thank you, Nick. Anne.
Thanks, Nick. I agree with the staff on this. I've been thinking back to how we got in the original MPM discussions, and we're talking about the management view of performance. And as I reflected back on that history, I think it's integral. So we did have a very interesting discussion in September when we addressed when these various issues rose up. But I do think we should be keeping it in there. I think it's part of our MPM proposals. I think you've done a good job in this paper to show us what the discussion was, where those points came from, what the board members were saying, their various arguments. But I think that now it does need to be there in the objective and in the definition. I agree with that. I think that the appropriate have a look at the rebuttable presumption is appropriate, but we'll get on to that later. I think that you've given us enough material here in this paper for us to make this decision, and I do support question one. Thank you.
And to Dale.
Thank you, Andreas. Thank you, staff, for the paper. I agree with staff's recommendation, totally consistent with our proposal since the beginning. The only thing that I would do that we approve those that agree with the staff's recommendation, subject to, at least in my case, I believe, to we are also approving the rebuttable presumption, because the way that we are defining here, exactly for the reason that we have the rebuttable presumption. I think that when we mention providing management's view of an aspect of performance, I think that this definition, it has to be together with the rebuttable presumption to be analyzed together. Thank you.
Nick?
So, likewise, I also support staff's recommendations for two reasons. First of all, I think for me, there is value in understanding this is management's view. That tells me there's information value in that in its own right, and I can decide whether that's a good and helpful view of performance or something I fundamentally disagree with. So I like that. The second reason, which I think is just as important, is I feel we need to have some kind of gating factor that ensures that just because measures are mentioned in information put out by the company, may be included in a table. I can think of a particular example where a preparer provides probably the best table in terms of the disclosures of how its NPM measures or non-GAAP, non-IFRS measures work at the moment. And in essence, they provide columns of each of the adjustments. You can see how that works all the way down the P&L. It's absolutely brilliant. They're not alone in doing that. I've seen many examples from the US of that happening as well. But actually, only one of those, they end up with five subtotals, which are adjusted. Only one of those is their KPI. And so they provide very useful disclosure, but better, and I think it is partly a subtle assumption, better to come back and say, actually, of those five, actually, one of them is our KPI. The adjustments are consistent across the P&L. I think is a good gating mechanism, as I see it, rather than we end up with a proliferation of potential measures.
Mary?
I'm going to buck the trend and not agree with the staff recommendation. But having set that out, I want to start by saying I think you've done a really good job pulling together all the information we have to consider to make this decision, because Grumpy Mary reading the beginning of the paper was like, why? Why do we not want to capture more? And I think the analysis that you provided in paragraph 23 is a good explanation of the risks. But having considered those risks, I do step back and think about what we were trying to accomplish initially and what we heard back on the ED. I was one of those who did not support, broadening the population of MPMs from, subtotals of performance. I thought we should keep our focus. And that's what we have already decided to do. We're not going to expand it to balance sheet measures, to cash flow measures, et cetera. So having put that gating on what's the population of MPMs, I then see more costs associated with a further gating mechanism once we get into adjusted subtotals, then I see benefits. And I think you've laid out, the right considerations in paragraph 23 and the preceding analysis, but I weight them differently. And some of the things I give different weights to than you do are, first of all, within the population of measures of performance, complementing totals and subtotals in the statement of performance. I think the idea of showing how alternative performance measures relate to the financial statements, I maybe give a bit more weight to the importance of that read across and seeing and understanding the relationship. Second, when I think about the costs of building the infrastructure to support a decision about whether it is or is not, whether it's in or out based on whether it is or is not a view of management performance, there's not just standard setting costs, but there's also ongoing compliance costs, because judgments like this are the kind of thing that get challenged by auditors, that get challenged by enforcers, that you have to do documentation of why your judgment is this or that. And what are we, what's the purpose of that? The purpose in order to prove why you've excluded something when, for the limited population that is a performance metric, we have provided important disciplines and we didn't make it optional, we made it mandatory, and that's, to improve the usability. So again, for me, I'd say I'd rather capture more. And I think I'd rather respond to the point that Nick raised about I'm interested to know what does provide management view by saying, tell us why you're providing it. Why are you publishing this number? And two, tell me whether you use it for internal management purposes. And to me, that's a more direct response to the information needs of users. So in terms of the one of the cost considerations that you have, which, about, let's say, picking up local GAAP measures or other items, I think I'd look at, again, responding more directly to that with maybe some specific scope exclusion that if the, you know, potential alternative performance measure is basically is based on a second set of financial statements prepared on using another framework, that that's outside the scope of these requirements, and just leave it at that. So I'd rather take that out directly rather than say, you know, put people through the mill of trying to demonstrate that it is or isn't. Basically, I don't want to leave an escape hatch for things that have the overall characteristics. So, good job. You didn't convince me. You may have convinced enough people to get it through, but I wanted to set out why I wasn't supportive of the your proposal in question one.
Bruce? Thanks very much. I'm in the other camp. I mean, I'm very supportive of this. I mean, I guess I keep thinking to myself, if we weren't going to include this within the definition, I'm not quite sure what we were reporting. I mean, to me, there are mechanisms in place that require certain things. So we require EPS in terms of what the IFRS standards are. We require operating profit, or we decide we can put in those requirements. And within countries and within those markets, the legislators or regulators can require things that they want or they feel they need. That's fine. To me, the real focus of these, when I first read the proposal put in, is this is management's, it's exactly what we're saying, it's management's objective in terms of what they've seen as performance. And I would think, I mean, subject to the guys who have more experience in this, but I would think as a user, that to me would have a lot of value in that management is saying these are the things that we think, you know, the way we've done that. Now, sure, there's obviously going to be ways in which that can potentially be manipulated, and maybe we can give ones they want or don't, and we'll look at the details into those now. But I think in terms of the overall question, what we're talking about in terms of including that, I think if this is not going to be something management are asserting is their view of performance in the financials, then I don't think, I don't think it would be worth pursuing these. So I would support it.
Firstly, thank you for putting this together. I think it was a helpful analysis. I'm supportive of what the staff is recommending in here, although I might struggle to put up my hand to vote yes on the first question without knowing what the answer is to the second question, because it's very conditional for me on getting the rebuttable presumption. So the way that I've been thinking about it is, it's sort of along the lines of one of the views that you've captured in here, but slightly different. And because I suspect on one of the board members it's been described in paragraph 21, I want to sort of articulate my slightly different articulation of this. So I would not say that my personal view is that I think it's more important, the transparency and discipline is more important than providing insight into management's view of performance. But I want to make sure that when we say we're requiring people to provide the reconciliations of management's performance, that that is actually a true statement. And so I don't want it to be too easy for somebody to say, well, it's not my view of performance, and therefore to avoid providing the reconciliation. Now, so I think that both things are important. I think it's useful to provide this picture of management's performance, but I think it's also important that there's transparency and discipline around it. And the reason why I like what the staff are proposing with the reference to management's view of performance in combination with the rebuttable presumption is I think that that will enable management to describe its view of performance, but with giving more confidence to me that I can say that it's a requirement, because we start out with the, you know, the public communication, but we allow management to then say, well, actually, that's, I'm only doing this because the regulator said, or I'm only doing this because this investor demanded. But at least they have to stop and explain it. And so I'm happy with that combination, but I wouldn't say, I wouldn't like to describe myself as saying that transparency and discipline is more important than management's view of performance. I'm trying to get both, because I think management's view of performance will be included within the big population, and then you can filter out the ones that actually aren't.
Mika.
I support the staff recommendation, but I just consider to retain providing management view of an aspect of performance means the aspect of an entity's financial performance. So with that, I support staff's recommendation. I truly think it's really essential and also beneficial for users and preparers to have this concept of management point of view and management view of aspect of performance, because now we are proposing the well-organized, structured statement or financial statement. That means that kind of the well-structured statement will restrict the information that will possibly on the face of the statement or financial statement. Then I think it might, from the management perspective, it might be more useful information for investors. It can be disclosed in the financial statement. I believe that is one of the value of the implementation of MPM idea, not only the adding transparency and the discipline, but it will be management to disclose more entity-specific information, probably more relevant from the management perspective. So I think that essence should be retained, and I think that idea is, for me, it is irreversible to retain this idea, because when I communicate with our stakeholders to explain this exposure draft, I use this concept again and again to raise awareness of what we proposing about well-structured statement, and at the same time expanding disclosure about key measures. So I think this is a kind of thing we try to have a good balance about well-structured statement and then expanded the disclosure with transparency and the discipline.
Jinja?
Okay, and I also support staff's proposal. I think, as Rika mentioned, I think management's views of an aspect of performance, from my perspective, is one of the key, actually the key element of introducing management performance measure. If without that, I really worry about the population, you know, of management performance measure, we are going to ask those companies to disclose maybe large number of non-GAAP measure will be included in the notes of the financial statement. I don't think it's our intention and it's our objective to ask a company to disclose so much information. So I think I totally support question 1A and B, because both are connected to each other. If we agree with the objective, and then we should include that element in the definition of management performance measure. I think it's also very easy to communicate with the stakeholders what we are going to ask, you know, a company to disclose, because this is the new terminology. So if without that, whether we still need to keep management, keep the name of the management performance measure, because obviously if we look at the name, management there. So I think there is no complicated between our objective, our intention, and also cost benefits consideration. So I agree with staff's recommendation.
Bertrand?
I agree with the staff recommendation. I will make comments to try to, I'm not sure I will succeed, but to try to mitigate Suzanne and Mary's concerns around that. I think what I suspect is that probably those MPMs will be the currently used non-GAAP measures by companies that are used to manage internally their performance, hence the name Management Performance Measure, which are those measures used by the management to manage their performance, both operating and financial. And once again, it will echo the comment I made on another subject this morning and echo to what I said yesterday. It's typically where I think that an information that is useful internally for prepare will is also useful externally for users, because the currently the non-GAAP measures prepared internally by preparers are those in most case in most instances that are effectively disclosed in the external reporting to enable users to appreciate the operating and financial performance of the companies. So I think those MPMs will at least within the boundaries of the European Union regulation, and notably all the recommendation issued by ESMA or the AMF, for instance, on how to present those non-GAAP measures, I think it would be, but I know the staff has already considered this, will be also useful information for us to provide regulations that enables to present all the information Mary's pointed out. So as is it an internal, is it a measure used internally? What is exactly this measure composed of? How you reconcile this measure to the nearest GAAP measure defined by the standards itself, and so on and so forth, which is just what is currently in the European regulation for non-GAAP measures. So I see that more as a kind of prolongation. I don't know if you say the word in English. Do you say that? No.
Yeah. Extension.
Extension. Yeah. As an extension. Sorry. As an extension of the current practice, the advantage of it being that because it will be MPMs will be defined by GAAP, so by the standards, by IFRS standards, it will mechanically become a GAAP measure. And then, of course, it will enable some companies to effectively present both in their notes and in their MD&A report just one single set of financial statements. Currently, the problem in some jurisdictions is that the financial statements are only comprised of GAAP measures, and the only note to the financial statements whereby you can eventually see in some jurisdictions non-GAAP measures is the note on operating segments, and then all the explanation of the operating segments note is in the MD&A report, and you have then two sets of financial statements, one comprising GAAP measures, the other one comprising non-GAAP measures. So there will be we will be with this in a position to get one single set of financial statements for both the primary financial statements and the notes and the MD&A report, which I think is really an improvement for the information provided by users, provided to users by companies.
Thanks. Oh, Aida?
Thank you. Just thought maybe clarify a couple of points, Bertrand. So, you know, some of the disclosures you talk about are consistent with what was proposed in the exposure draft, and our plan is to, you know, in a later discussion with board, go back and reconfirm those and possibly make some amendments to that. We also have a paper 21C, which touches a little bit on some of the aspects you've discussed. So just to kind of pause that, so we're not discussing disclosures here. I just want to comment a little bit on the other thing you said about this will become GAAP automatically. I don't think this is the expectation. Of course, it doesn't depend on the IASB, because it is the regulator who says in their respective requirements this is non-GAAP. But we have had discussions with the regulators prior to the ED, which made it clear the intention is not that this becomes GAAP. by the token of inclusion in financial statements as an MPM. And this was what was expressed in the basis for conclusions of the ED and the effects analysis. But I am aware of what you're saying, because depending on specificity of how their guidance is exactly drafted, unless they change their guidance in some jurisdictions, I'm not going to name them now, this would automatically become GAAP. But I think those regulators are aware, and I expect that some of them might decide to change their guidance because, you know, I don't think the board's expectation was to make this gap by including.
Let's avoid then this. I appreciate your comments, and you're totally right in clarifying this. The purpose of my comment was more to say this information will be. Companies will be in a position to put them in the primary financial statements. Mm-hmm. That's basic. So to present them in the primary financial statements, disaggregating them in the notes of the financial statements, and eventually further disaggregating them in the MD&A report. But there will be just one single set of P&L presented throughout. The information provided externally, which I think is really an improvement. And I agree with you. Let's leave aside then all the debate on gap, non-gap. I agree with you, and you're totally right, Aida. Thank you for the clarification.
Thanks. So I definitely have a more mixed view. And I'll say part of that mixed view stems from the use of what we're talking about, the management view, versus what it means in some people's minds. And I think it's exactly what Nick talked about. I mean, I would agree that these performance measures are management's view of what matters for the business. And therefore, the question for me isn't necessarily in whether it's management's view or not, but is it how are we creating a filter for the information that's going to be presented in the financial statements versus what they present externally. Because that is the typical pattern for users, is they typically receive information in press releases, earnings presentations, and then at some later point in time, they get a set of financial statements that they can use to disaggregate, expound, verify, do all those things with the information they've been given. So we're really talking about a filtering mechanism, which is question two, if we make a decision on one. Therefore, I would agree that it's hard for me to make a decision on one without discussing two. So these comments will sort of go back and forth. I guess my starting point is I came into the project at the exposure draft stage. I'm like the stakeholders. I came in and I read the document to get a view of what the board was saying. And to me, the board was saying a couple things. It was definitely talking about a management view, but then it also said, and this seemed far more forceful to me in my reading, and I'll read it. The board's view is that the performance measures used in public communications outside the financial statements should be consistent with the performance measures disclosed in the financial statements. And it talked a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And it talked about it in basis for conclusions. And now we're saying management's view is the filter to take out some of the outside communications. And that's where I started. Thankfully, I get to work here, and I've gotten to talk to staff, I've gotten to talk to other board members, and, you know, people have explained to me that that wasn't necessarily the thought process. It probably went the other way when they were creating the words, but those are the words that the stakeholders responded to. And I think we need to keep that in mind. It's not just the management view that they were responding to. They were responding to our statement that what goes outside the financial statements and what goes inside the financial statements should be the same. And now we're saying, no, we want to put a filter in because of management's view and reduce what appears in the financial statements. So there is that concern about the escape hatch. I do worry about that. I also think the worry about complexity and adding too much into the financial statements is a bit overblown. In my prior role, I did a lot of research on the non-GAAP measures in a jurisdiction where they proliferate far more than internationally. And the average number of, not management performance measures, but non-GAAP adjustments, sorry, not average, median, was three. Three measures. And we're worried about too much clutter. So I definitely come from a little bit different perspective. I agree with the management view, but to me, the management view is what gets presented externally. You don't present something unless you believe it and it's your view, other than in a few cases. And I think when we get to question two, there's some nuances and gradations that I go into. But for now, I'd really ask us to think about that filtering mechanism and whether we're going to put this much more emphasis on the management view portion, or if we're going to put emphasis on what we said, which was what appears outside is what should appear inside the financial statements.
Maybe for the benefit of everyone, just to replay the conversations we had, Zach, in that, you know, I completely understand reading that sentence, how that reads, whereas I think where the intention was that what is in the financial statements is consistent, so that you don't end up with a third set of measures that are in the financial statement, but for various reasons are not communicated outside, because that would be really terrible scenario, completely against the board's objective. So that was really the basis. But, you know, I understand what you're saying. What I'm hearing is that the board may be ready to vote on question 1A, but question 1B maybe.
Yeah.
I'll leave that to you.
Well, I was actually wondering whether we should reverse the order and start with question 2, actually, because there were at least three board members who said, well, depending on what we decide on question 2, I might be in a position to actually vote on question 1. I mean, I'm happy to just ask for question 1A, if that helps you, but we could also have just the sequence of questions reversed.
Well, we need all answers for the order. Do you feel stronger, Nick?
No, I don't know that it matters.
Why don't we then go to question 2 and seek the board's leaning on that one and make a decision and then go back to question 1? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
So moving on to the question 2 then. So the second question responds to the feedback indicating that there's potential for diversity in application of management's view of an aspect of performance. And so to increase the consistency of application while reducing the risk of excluding measures intended to be captured, staff are proposing that the board introduce a rebuttable presumption that a subtotal communicated in an entity's public communications reflects management's view of an aspect of performance. The paper explains that such a presumption creates a risk of including as management performance measures subtotals that were not intended, those that do not meet the objective of providing information about management's view of an aspect of performance. So to balance this risk, the staff are proposing that the presumption could be rebutted by reasonable and supportable evidence that such a measure does not represent management's view, and have suggested guidance to help judge when that might be the case. The paper also considers whether there should be a requirement to disclose circumstances when an entity rebuts the presumption. However, in the staff's view, doing so could be onerous and often not provide material information. So the staff recommendation does not include introducing such a disclosure requirement. So the second question on page 17 is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to A, establish a rebuttable presumption that a subtotal income and expenses included in communications outside financial statements represents management's view of an aspect of performance? B, to allow an entity to rebut the presumption when there is reasonable and supportable information demonstrating that subtotal of income and expenses does not represent management's view of an aspect of performance. And finally, C, to provide application guidance on how to assess whether there is reasonable and supportable information to support the rebuttal along the lines of the analysis in paragraphs 39 to 45.
I wonder if we should split the discussion rather than discuss them more. At once, I leave that to you again.
Well, let's first hear what people have to say. Is that a new one or an old one?
Yeah, that's a new one.
Is that old one? A new one?
New one.
Okay, there you go.
Okay, so setting aside agreement with the rebuttable presumption, I'll presume the board goes ahead with the management view, and then we're discussing the rebuttable presumption. Two key things for me when I'm talking about this, or thinking about this, and the first is, my general framework is we're increasing transparency around the information that's used to communicate performance. That's the goal, that's the objective. And the way I would shift the thinking about this is we present a series of criteria in the rebuttable presumption, but to me, treating all those equally is probably an error. I think we need to think more along a gradation of things. So in terms of where there's greater transparency, and I think Mary touched on this, when you have local gap, when you have industry-defined measures, you know, the example from the U.S. jurisdiction is FFO is clearly defined. People know what you're talking about. there's more of a rebuttable presumption there to me that it's not management's view. You're using a metric that people generally understand and know how it's calculated. So there's less need to verify it in the financial statements. So it doesn't fit the view of what should appear in the financial statements. But on the other end of the continuum, I do get concerned with things like investor requests, because that's very fuzzy. Management has the ability to say no. They do, trust me, a lot. And so I think looking at it in that way, with a gradation rather than an absolute set of criteria, would be pretty important for deciding what gets included in those MPMs, because I think on one end of the spectrum, there's more of a need for transparency and understanding. And then the second major point is we're talking at the level of a management performance measure, but we have to disaggregate that. Because that's what we do. And when you go and look at examples of what's being presented, and Bertrand, I'm sure, will back me up on this, you typically have a measure with several adjustments. And I think it is very easy to think of a scenario where you'd have a measure that's presented that management agrees is something they want to present, but they may not agree with one or two of the adjustments, but they're provided at the request. I think we need to be explicit when we do this, whether we're working at the level of the measure in terms of management's view, or whether we're talking about each of the individual adjustments and agreeing with those. Because I can see three scenarios developing where management doesn't agree with one or two of the adjustments, or it's not their view internally. Either they present the whole measure as is with all the adjustments in the financial statements, or they take out a couple of the adjustments because that's not their view. To me, that's a very dangerous option because you actually have two different numbers that appear in two different sources. And, well, I won't go on why that's bad. And the third is you say, well, I don't agree with two of the adjustments, so I'm just not going to present it as a management performance measure. And to me, that's even worse. You know, you agree with most of it, but not some of it. And those are very difficult decisions that management teams are going to have to make. And they'll have discussions with their auditors about what's the best way to go. I think being clear that we're talking about the measure here. You may not agree with all of the adjustments in their entirety, but you understand why they communicate an aspect of performance. So if you have the adjustment externally, it should appear, even if you don't necessarily agree with one or two of the adjustments. Or reconfigure your adjustment externally and simply present that item outside of the measure. It's the other option.
I'm not sure I got your point. Could you provide an example?
So if a company were to present something like adjusted operating profit, and they would exclude restructuring costs in the period, they would exclude stock-based compensation. The latter, though, doesn't necessarily reflect their view of how the business runs, but because they operate in a sector where that's traditionally excluded by analysts, they want to provide it because, well, they're being good corporate citizens, and that's what they should do. Does that remain a management performance measure with both of those adjustments? Do you exclude it? Do you take one of the adjustments out? Because your lens is the management view.
We do one round first, and then I'll bring you back in. Sue.
Sex made me nervous now. Done a good job, but wish you hadn't. So just to go back a step, I should have actually said at the start, it was great that Zach reminded me of some of the words in the exposure draft, because that was very much how I thought about the exposure draft, and I might have been wrong thinking about it that way, but that was the way that I had thought about it, which is why I do care a lot about making sure that, you know, we're really true to our statement that there will be this transparency and discipline provided, the measures that are out there. Now, I'm trying to find a compromise here. So I am supportive of the idea of going down this path with a rebuttable presumption, because I do acknowledge that there will be circumstances where there might be measures which really are not what management's interested in at all, but they happen to be used. And I'm trying to find a halfway house with my fellow board members and our respondents to get an aspect of management performance in here. So for me, the neatest way to do that is my sort of second best, to just have all subtitles, is to have management performance, but with a rebuttable presumption. So I'm happy to explore to go down this path. But as I said, Zach has sort of provided some good reasons for why we probably need to be maybe a little bit nuanced in it rather than so black and white about, you know, identify this thing on the list. But the basic idea I like. So I just had a couple of really small suggestions in terms of the approach here. I like the idea of a rebuttable presumption, but the way that I would have expressed a rebuttable presumption is not so much talking about trying to use it to get consistency. I think we use rebuttable presumptions, and I think we'd be using rebuttable presumptions here because we sort of expect it to typically be true. So if I look at the IFRS 9 example that you gave as the benchmark, and very clever of you to choose something you knew I'd like as a benchmark. The reason why we use 30 days past due as evidence of a rebuttable presumption situation for a significant increase in credit risk was because banks came and showed us statistics where they could show a really high correlation between increases in probabilities of default and days past due, which convinced us at the time that it was most likely to be the case that there would be a significant increase in credit risk where you saw this, but there'd be cases where it wouldn't, like people forget to pay their credit card bills at Christmas time. And so you could rebut it in some of those situations. And for me, we're looking at a similar thing here. The fact that it's being publicly communicated by management to, you know, external sources in the first instance makes it look pretty likely it's going to be something management thought was a good idea. But I'm acknowledging there will be circumstances when they can point to a reason why not. And so that's why I think a rebuttable presumption makes sense, because I expect it in the first instance to be true with caveats. The only thought I did have, and it was something that actually Bertrand mentioned in passing, not for this reason, but I just did think about it a little bit while I was looking at this, is whether we should have something in the other direction, which is basically saying, if this measure is being communicated publicly and there's and the entity actually uses this measure internally for its own purposes, that should be a situation when it is a management performance measure. You shouldn't really be rebutting it in that situation. You would expect that to actually be a positive example of sort of reinforcing the fact it's a management performance measure. And I wasn't sure if it's useful to have a sort of affirmation of not rebutting or not, but just as an observation somewhere, it might be a useful thing because it also does sort of give people comfort that we actually are interested in management performance measures. But there are discipline things we're thinking about as well. But I'm comfortable to go with this direction.
I would come back to the point that Mary made before. One of the two things that you are interested in disclosing, the second point was exactly to that end, right? Does management use that number internally as well? Mm-hmm. Bertrand?
I agree with the staff recommendation. I wrote not disagree a bit too much as a note, but the staff knows that perfectly. I've already told them that. Let me explain why. And it will probably echo some comments that Zach and Sue have just made. I think a management performance measure for me is really a measure that is used internally by a company to manage its business and that they will provide externally. And we shouldn't impede the management to choose whatever the measure they want to choose. I mean, at least that's my view. Then, having said that, then of course you need to provide information. So I think one thing that could answer Zach's concern is of course the reconciliation to the nearest gap measure. If you said that your adjusting operating metric excludes share-based compensation, excludes restructuring cost, then you will have aligned the subtotal of your MPM and then align a reconciliation line by line showing amount of restructuring expense, amount of stock-based compensation, and so on and so forth, until the nearest gap measure, which will be, for instance, in this instance, EBIT, or even though it's not called maybe that way, I don't remember exactly what we have decided it should be labeled, but for sure I won't put EBITDA, I assure you, I'm not referring to that. So I think... The the broader the possibility is for management to choose a metric they use internally and to use that as an external or as a metric for the external reporting, then of course the strongest the needs for the disclosures is, and you need to explain whether it's used internally or not. I totally concur with Mary's comment on question one. What are the income and expenses included, excluded, and how you reconcile that to what the standard will define as being the nearest gap measure possible. Having said that, it's where I come from. Having said that, so for me, rebuttable presumptions, it's a bit too much, and it will probably echo what Sue just said on the fact that if it's used internally and used externally, for me it's an useful information for preparers, hence it's a useful information for users. It's typically what I said yesterday, saying that if it's useful for preparers, it is useful for users, because there will be then adherence onto the management to these specific metrics, of course, because it's exactly the way they will look at the business. So I would figure out that it would be useful for users. But then, of course, I totally appreciate Zach's concern. Then we will have to be very transparent in the requirements we'll set, so as to ask preparers to reconcile precisely to the nearest gap measure possible. So even though I think it's a bit too much, all these rebuttable presumptions, having discussed with the staff, with another board member on this, I understand that some maybe maybe less, a bit more reluctant than me in this regard. So I can appreciate that this can be a consensus. So I would go in that route.
Thank you.
I don't know if Zach, it could answer the concern you expressed, what I've said, or. But then I understand that Ida said earlier that we would discuss that at the subsequent meeting, if I correctly understood.
Nick will start working on it as soon as we finish.
I don't know if it could answer your concern or absolutely not, if you have something else in mind.
I think I'd have to think about it.
Yeah, okay.
Mary.
I'm going to lower the tone of the conversation by an extremely technical point. Which is, when you say provide application guidance on how to assess whether there's reasonable and supportable information for the rebuttal in site 39 to 45, one of the items in 39 to 45 is externally imposed, and I just throw out a note of caution on that. I think I would exclude as externally imposed any contracts, requirements from contracts to which the entity is a party. Because basically, if you want to use the escape hatch, just write into a contract that you're required to provide this information, and it's a self-imposed external requirement. So, my sense is that the staff is looking for, let's say, regulatory, whether it's prudential or market, required. I think best practice is not a requirement. So, if it's typical practice for those in this industry, or they're encouraged by the equivalent of CFA Institute, in a country, an encouragement is not a requirement. There may still be a ground for rebutting it on otherwise, but let's be clear what we mean about an external requirement, and I assume it's a relatively narrow case rather than a broad range of things that could be considered external requirements and therefore bounce you out of having to provide the disclosures for an NPM.
You know, I want to come back.
I know. I'll wait. I'll be patient.
Okay. All right. Very good. Today.
Thank you, Andreas. I support the staff's recommendation. I think that we should allow a level of judgment. I mean, that if we try to be too objective here, and I understand all points that were made here, we simply end up having little or too much information in the notes. I think that the way that we are trying to figure this out, including the rebuttable presumption, I believe is the right way of doing this. Even if it is, for example, in a contract that I don't know whether we can do some refinements to avoid some more clear escape path. But I really think that in principle, management's view, rebuttable presumption should work, and I think that's the right way to go. I have just one. You made one. You included one question, but you haven't included in the question to say that should there be a disclosure requirement when you use the rebuttable presumption? And then I understood from here that no. I just think that this is something that you really should include in the base for conclusion, why we believe that when the rebuttable presumption is not used, this information shouldn't be necessarily be in the notes. I mean, let's say I'm not using this. I mean, just trying to explain. Thank you.
Peter?
Thank you very much. I support staff's recommendation as a good compromise. And I actually think to retain the management views of an aspect of performance doesn't narrow the scope of MPM. I rather think retaining it is still, I think we have a broader range of MPMs supposed to be considered as MPM. Because of retaining that. So I think it's very necessary for something to protect unnecessary information to be included in the financial statement, because I truly think if we don't have any restrictions about what should be considered as MPM and MPM disclosure, I really don't know how many pages the entity will start to include the MPM information part of the financial statement. I think that is not the kind of the thing we intended to do. And I think I agree with the implementation of rebuttable presumption, because yes, I think everybody in the market has a kind of the quite unwritten consensus about using a rebuttable presumption is a kind of really high hurdle to overcome. So I think that is consistent with this case, because if MPM disclosures were required in our new standards, then auditor will start audit the internal control over the public communication made by the management, which would be in the scope of the financial audit. And then also the auditor are going to check all the documents management use for communication. That means the auditor has a full information of the evidence, but should be considered as an MPM, what is not subject to the MPM. So with that information, I think it's very difficult for management to argue specific MPM is not the MPM without having robust evidence to support that fact. So I think putting this rebuttable presumption will help both preparers, auditors, and users to get the real necessary information about the MPM. And then I believe that will make bring us to the right scope of MPM disclosure.
Thank you. I think I generally support direction of travel here, but I have a clarification that I'm after, which builds on that example around share-based compensation. So let's say that's an element that management, as Zach said, have chosen to add back because they have been encouraged to do so, because that may be common practice in sector. In that respect, it then, however we set up the rebuttable presumption, it falls in to become an NPM, is I think what we're saying could be the case. My question is, will I know that that's something that they just put in because users have asked for it, or group sector analysts have asked for it to be put in, or will I be blind to that fact? Because the reason I ask is that, you know, I would have an investment philosophy that I'd rather not invest in companies that add back stock option expenses. And so there's information value for me in what seems to be a management performance might measure, whether they do that or not. And, you know, I would try. It could almost be a first cut. You know, you can't always avoid them. Some sectors it's very difficult, but I'd rather not be in there. And I guess what I'm slightly concerned about is whether I'm going to know that information or not here. Or whether it's just going to appear to me as a NPM. Sorry, as an NPM.
Treat it as a direct question.
Okay, thank you.
Nick, I'm sorry, do you want to answer?
do you want to answer on my behalf? Yeah.
I think Aida would be ready to step in.
In that sense. My initial reaction would be that there's probably not a guarantee that you would have that information, but we do have the requirement that the entity would disclose why they think that that provides useful information. And one would expect they would explain that within there, but there's no guarantee, yes, that that's how they would approach that.
Okay.
I don't know what you want to add to that.
And I would just maybe say there is a danger of being contradictory with Zach's objective, because on one hand we are being, and I think very much what we say in paragraph 42 stands, that, you know, it's quite hard to rebut that once you've agreed to put a measure out in public, then to almost backtrack for the purpose of MPMs. So if you have actually agreed that, you know, put this measure out, excluding this share-based payments, and then have MPM disclosure say, well, this measure is here, but we actually disagree, to me, it's almost like a little bit contradictory. So I would make even stronger statement that I don't expect this disclosure, because the assessment is, back to Zach's point, it is the measure. And if I'm communicating this measure, that's the measure I'm communicating. I'm being consistent with what I'm presenting, and I'm putting those adjustments in. I think there is another point here which is linked to some other points, but this is not direct answer, so I'll wait with comments on that.
It feels like we're walking quite a thin line here through all of this.
So you want to come in?
Yeah, just to respond to that, I do think it might produce behavior changes when we say the management performance measure as presented needs to match what appears outside the financial statements. And I'm okay with that. One way that I've seen companies resolve that, where they have that exact situation, where they don't believe in the adjustment, is they either disaggregate the line item in the statement of profit and loss so that people can do the adjustment directly, or they present it as a non-adjusting line item provided for informational purposes. And either of those, I think, I would hope, would comply with everything we've laid out.
Yep. So are you saying, Nick, you want to give some kind of hint that this is what you expect to see if you really, if you really don't believe in adjusting for share-based payment?
I think Nick's response is right. If you're going to have to justify the adjustments that you've made, why this is, you know, you would hope they would be true to what they believe there and simply say this, you know, we make this particular adjustment, whatever it is, because that's what market has demanded of us. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be rather odd justifying things that you don't believe in.
Yeah, can we maybe just reserve the right to come back to this when we look at the disclosures, Nick, as to what exactly we expect to see? Is an explanation of the measure per se? Because I see adjustment explanation, simple explanation of how they've been calculated, what they are, as opposed to basis, but maybe we can tilt it to go towards this, or maybe that's just something we can take away. And
yep. Tom,
I was just on the last one, I thought we'd cover that in paragraph 106A, where why is the management performance measure management's view? How is it calculated? How does it provide useful info? Like, that second part is really important. So you get the calculation and they have to tell you why they think this is useful information. So, I mean, we might want to tinker with it, but we always wanted to get that out, and it's always been in there. The thing I wanted to ask about also kind of got jogged. I want to sort of note something and then ask a question and then make a comment. If I go to paragraph 40, which I think is a useful paragraph, because one of the things I was worried about, a little bit the opposite, is somebody looking at something that was required by local GAAP or was an industry measure and people just walking away from it, declaring, industry measure, I don't have to touch it. I think 40 was a really helpful paragraph to me because it essentially says, you know, you could use it if it's imposed on you, something along those lines. It then says, however, when measures are judged to provide insight into management's view of performance, an entity is not expected to rebut the presumption. So even if it's imposed on you, you're supposed to still look at it, as I understand this paper, and that's why I'm going to ask the question. You're supposed to say, do I believe this is an aspect of our performance, if I'm using it out there? And so have I got paragraph 40 right? And you give the South African example. Yeah, okay, good. And so then I think that's really important, and I really, in three, I strongly support the third one about the application guidance, because I think there's a lot of subtlety here, and we'll have to write some good application guidance, so I really strongly support three. And even there, I think even for an auditor, so if somebody was to rebut, and an auditor in some communication, the auditor found that they're citing this measure, and they're saying, and you should really pay attention to this measure because we really think it, you know, it tells about our entity's performance. To then say, well, actually, they made us do it, and you know, like, you know, you can be caught on that. And I think there'd be lots of evidence if they're using it in public communications in this very positive way as conveying performance, to then declare it's only there because I was forced. I think an auditor should rightly say, no, it's not there because you were forced. It's there because you claim it's useful. So I think we have some protections on that. And so I guess, do I have anything else in this? And the last thing is that I think protects us is if people do use it in public communications in the way I just described, and investors go and then look at the note expecting, because I think most companies will do this appropriately and they'll do the right thing, and they go to the note and it's not there, then I think there's going to be some market discipline imposed on entities that do that. You know, it'll stand out. Everything points to the fact that there should have been a disclosure in your notes and it's not there. And you know, economic theory and I think practice would suggest that users should beware in those circumstances. So I'm kind of, in the end, I think I'm strongly supportive that we do the rebuttable and that you do the guidance. And I think we can do it in a way to get around most people's big concerns and get something that's tractable. Because my last comment was, I accept what Zach said, but I think if we look at jurisdictions all over the world and all public communications, I'm not sure that there might not be, in some cases, many of them out there, many of these potential measures, and we do need a way of winnowing them. Although I kind of accept, if you kind of look at a U.S. example, the way the SEC operates and stuff, I think they are quite constrained. So I still think we need something that makes this tractable and work. And so I think the what the staff have produced is something that'll let the project go forward.
Thank you. Mary, you want to come back?
I did, because I want to go back to Zach's points, and it's not clear to me what the staff answer, so I've been making up a specific example. So I'm an entity with rate-regulated activities. And my management, you know, my potential management performance measure adds in regulatory income and expense. Well, no, that would be in operating income, but adds it as a revenue adjustment and treats it as revenue. And the adjustments exclude, let's say, foreign exchange and share-based payment. And this may, you know, I'm just trying to give specifics so we can talk about it. If, let's say, I said, I'm doing this because I believe that you should regard these adjustments as part of revenue in the period. So I believe in, you know, adjustment A for rate-regulated activities. I believe in excluding FX because I'm going to analyze FX separately. But I don't believe in excluding share-based payment, but everybody else in my industry does, so I'm just going to do it so it's comparable. Does that knock out the whole MPM because there's an element of it that I don't believe in? Or do you say the MPM is in, even though there's one adjustment that you don't believe in?
It seems back to the paragraph 42 again. Is presumes that you would have gone through this process in deciding what to communicate externally, and you could have done, you know, one of two things. One is completely rejected your share-based payment adjustment to say, I don't believe in this, I'm only adjusting for Forex and for revenue, and this is my metric, and then that is automatically MPMs. Well, one of three things. Or one is, like you said, I've adjusted the share-based payment, and then you argue, well, if you've gone through that process for the outside communication, why is there anything different for your management performance measures? Because you would have presumably considered, do I want to be associated with this measure? And you concluded the answer is yes. Or you could have a third scenario where you do both. You can say, okay, this is our kind of entity specific that doesn't include share-based payments, and this is the one that's industry measure, which does exclude share-based payment. And then you come back into what Nick was describing earlier in your disclosures for MPMs. You would still bring them both in because you communicate them. They are. It's hard to get out of 42 because nobody forced you to make these adjustments. But then you can have a better explanation. We disclose this because this is kind of industry norm. The other one is the one we developed because we think for our entity-specific circumstances.
But let's knock out the third example because that's kind of outside what we are talking about. And, you know, where you do both. So let's say you just do one, and while you have three components of adjustments, you identify the third component as a request of an external party. So that, you know, I agree it's, you know, subject to the discussion in 42, but what 42 is saying is it's maybe a marginally higher hurdle, but you can get over it. But it's not clear to me whether it knocks out the whole of the MPM or not.
Can I try and rearticulate what I think Mary's asking you?
Can you answer as well? Okay, please.
Are we saying, so let's say that this company, this fantasy Mary company, that's its only measure that it communicates externally that's not prescribed or described or whatever by us, and they call this, I don't know, adjusted operating profit. Are we asking them whether the adjusted operating profit metric is a management performance measure? Like the final metric, and then the thing gets subject to reconciliation, or are we asking whether the individual pieces within it are assessed?
Well, I thought clearly we weren't clear that it's always about the measure itself, exactly. Not individual adjustments.
So my concern then is you lose all of the reconciliations to the bits that they actually think are. So it means that it's... If you have one thing in there that is because the market wants it and 50 things in there that are yours, none of it's going to get subject to the reconciliation, if
I
understood you correctly.
But I thought it's the other way around. I interpret it the other way around because the hurdle is higher. You're looking at the measure. So how can you justify on the basis of disagreement with single adjustments, given that you've already gone through the process and voluntarily decided to include it outside? How can you justify that?
Depends what your test is, whether you're saying is the number at the bottom, the subtotal, which is
the
market, is the measure entirely your measure, or is the measure not entirely your measure?
Yeah, I mean, I think this your measure, I think this is back to the point Tom was making earlier, and I think there's a little bit of a danger us getting, because transparency is important, but this is not to say that some measures that are maybe well-defined, and we know there are industries out there that define these very precisely, very clearly, this does not preclude it from being management performance measure just because we know what it is, because the whole thing is, does this measure communicate?
Let me ask you a more simple question then. So your intent is that in my, and that in Mary's fact pattern, there would be a reconciliation of all the bits except the share-based payment.
That it would be considered a management performance measure and therefore subject to the adjustments. And then the question is, A, I sincerely didn't know how to answer that question. And so I think we need clarity in the first instance. But two, I think it then raises the question of would you be required to A, consider the management performance measure, and B, to reconcile the presented number with, you know, an asterisk that says, I don't really agree with this share-based payment, but it's industry practice, so I've included it. Or do you only, you know, show a number that you're not actually presenting in other public communications, which is the pre-share-based payment number?
I mean, I don't think we can do that because of the point of the consistency. So I think you either have the measure that you communicated outside or you don't have it. And my understanding was that, again, you know, back to what I think we were trying to say in 42, the hurdle is quite high that you can say, I have voluntarily decided to have this adjustment in my communication with outside, but I'm going to tell you a story that this was not my metric. I think that will be very hard to have reasonable and supportable information, you know, to rebut. But it's a very dangerous territory to say in therefore it is never. I think what is useful back, you know, with the comment that you made originally, Zach, is to say it is assessment of a metric as a whole, and just a note that, you know, management may, you know, feel that they disagree with one of those metrics, one of those adjustments made, but that doesn't necessarily mean that management has supportable, reasonable and supportable information to rebut. I think that's the furthest we can go, because otherwise we really risk going down very rules-based, slippery slope, because I don't know that we can envisage all possible scenarios in which, you know, this can happen. But I don't know, Zach, would that address your concern? And
yeah, I think from the user perspective, they want them to match, and we're just requiring them to be in the financial statements. It's someone else's responsibility to determine assurance, but what the users want is assurance and definitions and transparency, and so that gets us there. I think not being clear about what happens, though, is where we could get into trouble. So if that's the view, is that we want it to appear like for like, then we should be explicit about that and say it's about the measure, not about each of the specific adjustments.
Do you want to come back on that one? Or?
Yeah, I think what would be helpful for people would be to use a sort of simple example that you know, these bits are what management would use as just this one share-based payment thing or whatever that's not. And so I think what we're saying is, management could say, well, by the way, this isn't what we, you know, asterisk, this isn't our bit, but explain the rest and tie it into sort of the subtotal. So people understand how to think about it. I think that would be helpful.
So we can take that away when we look at disclosures as a package.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Then we can do some examples and show that
Okay. Tom.
Yeah, I just want to come back. I was kind of originally way, way back in the camp that we wanted to rope in all of these things. And I backed off that, and I really don't want us to use what to me sounds like a very extreme case to start writing a ton of stuff. And if I look at this case, let's suppose there's three adjustments and you decide it's an industry one, you bring it in, and you don't like one. But you've decided to present it. And I would still come back. Have you used it like a management performance? In other words, do you use the full industry measure with its three adjustments, compare it to your competitors, compare it to last year, talk about it like it's an aspect of performance, and then presumably, and then you say, but oh, by the way, we really hate this adjustment, so we're not giving you the reconciliation. I still think the two things will happen. I think auditors will really question that, you know, this bit about, you know, you claimed you didn't want it, but you used it over and over again. And I think the market will also discipline somebody doing what looks to me like a game. And I think for somebody who did really seriously take this, they might say, here's the three-item measure that the industry uses. and here's, you know, we've now removed share-based payment. Here's the new total. And they'll start comparing that total because they might do both just to cover the industry, and then they might do their own, in which case I'd probably be okay with them just doing their own with the thing removed. But I just find it hard to believe that somebody would put this line down that says we don't believe in share-based and then use the measure in repeated communications talking about their performance. And I think the minute they do that, then it becomes an MPM, regardless of whether they make a statement they don't like share-based payment. So I'm back to, again, what convinced me to really embrace what the staff is proposing is to keep this tractable so the thing works and the thing can progress. And I'd just be very cautious about trying to cover off every eventuality to rope in all of these things. If some escape, then, you know, I think the investors will punish that entity if it's really looks like they're being manipulative.
Honestly, I'm totally in agreement with what Tom just said. I mean, for me, in the, as far as I understood, the fact pattern that Zach and Mary commented on, both measures would be MPMs. So the one without and the one with, and there will be a reconciling item to be presented in the notes showing what has been included from the one without, so that we exactly know all three measures. And then the one with would be reconciled to EBIT. I mean, that's as simple as that. And so I'm a bit struggling in your cases where whether I have missed something or what, but for me, both the without that is used by the management internally and communicated externally, and the industry practice that is communicated, industry metric that is communicated externally, whether or not they like it or not, both are MPMs, and there needs to be a reconciliation between the two. And I don't see how is it possible to escape that.
I mean, is there something about stewardship? At least I hear, when I hear your comments, Nick, on why it is useful for you to understand what management really thinks, because it's not really about metric anymore. It's about understanding management per se, and this is also the value, which stewardship is maybe part of, like, neglected, you know, child of this whole thing. Is that right? Is that kind of where you were getting at with this?
You could express that in a different way, in that it's a different perspective from the buy side and the sell side. So when we say sell side, I think it's what we mean by industry measures, because they are the industry-driven analysts, generally on the buy side, not always, but you're more of a generalist, and actually the sell side have incentives to try and make things look cheap. But, you know, that's the game they're in. So, cynically, that's where I think a lot of this comes from. I mean, just picking up on the example, I think one realistic course of action would be management would just say, you know, they just actually say, well, it's not our measure. We're not going to provide it any longer. And to me, that would be fine. You know,
this behavioural change that may.
I think that's equally a possibility that happens. Yeah,
that happened.
But then the without would be reconciled to EBIT still, and you will have a breakdown by line items of what you've excluded from your without, and there is likely to be a line, share-based compensation. So I think in each case is the information, the key point will be the reconciliation to the nearest gap measure as defined in IFRS.
I was about to take the vote, given that we have already... I know. So use them sparsely, right? I would really like to close this down, Ron. So please provide your comments, and then we go to the vote.
Rika, did you...
No, Ida.
Oh, okay. Sorry, just... I think the point, just to reiterate the... You know, what we are taking away is that the measures that are needing transparency or not needing transparency is not necessarily criteria back to discussion, because I just think it's important to clarify again, because few of you made comments that if this is widely known, it's not MPM. I don't think there is that link. I think just a point on Mary that you made earlier on clarifying contracts not necessarily being externally imposed and therefore not easy to rebut. I think where we were going at this is something at quite high level, and I had would have expected that, you know, auditors' exercise of judgment and substance over form would probably lead in that, but not expecting to have to write so much guidance about this. And I just want to understand from the board, either now or at some point, what is the level of detail, because that was the level of detail that we were not necessarily expecting to go into when, you know, putting rebuttable presumption. We have our Appendix B that shows in some standards there is no application guidance at all, but in this case we thought it would be helpful to set out something, but probably not to the level that says, you know, contracts that you write are not considered externally imposed, because it's again dangerous ground, but that's didn't get reaction from anybody else on the level of application guidance, how much to provide. So,
I guess a simple response on that external, rather than writing all the things that are prohibited, is to just say something like, externally imposed, for example, by a market or by a market regulator or local corporate, governance requirements.
As an example,
an example that sets it at a pretty clearly, legislation or regulation.
Okay. I think we can do that without. We might need to come back on this, because I heard several mentions of, when measure is used internally, it's expected to be MPM, or we want disclosures about this. It makes me a little bit nervous, because I'm not sure there's always necessarily this one-on-one relationship. We had extensive discussion about the interaction with IFRS 8 and segment measures, and I'm just a little bit nervous about us saying, well, management performance measures is measures that management uses to manage internally. They may be, but I have heard many companies saying for internal measurement, for us, perfectly fine to exclude share-based payment because you don't have control as a manager over it, but for externally, we don't think that should be excluded from our metrics. And to me, that kind of made sense. So I'm just, pausing, because I heard several of you saying we want to make this link, and if we need, we'll write another paper on it to explore that in the future.
We didn't say we want to make a link.
Andreas, could I offer a suggestion on how to proceed with that one? I see I think the question of whether or not management uses this measure internally is separate from the assessment of whether it presents management, management views, and it's a nuance, but I would suggest that we try and draw that, and I would discourage you from bringing this whole thing back for that nuance. I think, we're at a point where we have to take a decision, but I think your example of the metrics that are imposed on unit managers exclude share-based payments because they aren't, they don't control the grants. That's maybe, again, more detailed than somebody like Nick was looking for, but it's the basic question. The question of does management use this is different from the does management not believe in these adjustments and only is doing it because it's externally imposed. So I think that's maybe overstating I think that's a drafting consideration and making sure you have things lined up rather than further.
I would agree with that.
I don't want us to start talking about how these are used internally. Have we started this? It's about the external information we know that was being provided, and I don't think we should start talking about internally. It did come up in the feedback, a small mention of it, but I don't think we should go there. I don't think that's what we're trying to do here. And then we're going to get into commercial sensitivity all over again, which we don't want to.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. That's really helpful.
Okay, are we then ready to vote?
I would start with question two. I would start that with a sub question. So the first sub question is, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to establish a rebuttable presumption to a subtotal of income and expense, including public communication outside financial statements, represents management's view of an aspect of performance? Can I see a show of hands?
Well.
Okay. The second one is about the rebuttal per se, and allow an entity to rebut the presumption where there's reasonable supportable information demonstrating that the total of income and expenses does not represent management's view of an aspect of performance, taking into account the points that Zach, Sue and Mary have made about it's about the metric, right? It's not about the things that have been excluded line item by line item, but it's really about the metric, right? Can I see a show of hands?
12.
And last bit, provide application guidance on how to assess where there is a reasonable and supportable information to support the rebuttal, with a caveat of not over-engineering that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Okay, can I see a show of hands?
12.
Okay, so now that we've killed question two, can we go back to question one?
We've raised question two up from the dead.
What a question.
Yeah, good. Yeah, very much. Yeah. Now we supported the staff. Right. So does the board agree, and I would do it in two tranches again. Question one, does the board agree with the staff recommendation to retain providing management's view of an aspect of performance as the objective of management performance measures? Can I see a show of hands?
10.
And second, if so, does the board agree to retain management's view of an aspect of performance in the definition of management performance measures?
11.
All right. Okay. Thank you. You have now deserved yourself a break. 15 minutes.
And last one as well.
But both probably. Okay. Can we reconvene at 3 o'clock?